The following talk was given at the Insight Meditation Center in Redwood City, California. Please visit our website at audiodharma.org.
So, good evening, everyone, and welcome back. And as we did last time, we can start a little bit more louder. Let's see, or do I need to speak loud? Is that good? Can you hear? Okay. Yeah, but it was kind of... Okay, so... As people are still coming in a little bit, it's nice to start a little bit informally. And if any of you have any questions you'd like to ask from last week or from practicing at home, this would be a great time. Yes, but if you could wait for the mic. Here comes Jim with the mic. In the second row.
Hello?
Yeah.
Okay. So, I was wondering if these handouts are available on the website or by email?
They are on the website. So we have a website called, you get to it through our website, Insight Meditation Center website, but the website is called audiodharma.org. And that's where we post all of the recorded talks that happen here at the center. And we have recorded talks for, it's embarrassing how many talks we have up there. It goes on and on and on for a decade or more of talks, you know. And we give several a week here, so, just, you know, you could spend the rest of their... if you go there on the left-hand menu, it says something like Introduction to Meditation, and then this series has been recorded. In previous versions of it are recorded there. So if you miss a class, you can go hear it there. And this one is also recorded, but it might not make it in that series, just in the general long list. And so if you go in the Introduction to Meditation series, there you'll see the PDFs of these handouts.
Thank you.
Yes, if you can move the mic. Here on the floor in front of the steps.
Unfortunately, I missed the first two classes because I was traveling. Any tips on how to catch up today that I'm here?
Oh, I see. I'll think about it as I begin and see how it goes. But you could certainly listen to these first two talks if you go on that Audio Dharma website. The first two classes, I think, laid a foundation. But, I think that whatever you pick up today will be useful. I'll try to keep it in mind. Some people here might be new. So, yes.
I can't say I followed your homework every day, but I did follow it. I was able to follow the meditation practice some days. And I think one thing I did find very helpful is I think something you called, noting or labeling?
Yes.
And somehow packaging the diversions that came to mind and just putting a label on them and maybe putting them in a box.
So labeling them with a simple one word, right, somehow puts them on the shelf or lets them put aside.
Right.
They're acknowledged and they don't need so much attention then.
Right, I found just short sort of, work anxiety or fear, unemployment fear, that sort of thing, was very helpful.
Fantastic.
Yeah.
Yes. So those of you, what he referred to is called mental noting, and one of the supports for mindfulness practice that is taught, when I was introduced to this in Burma, we did a lot of this mental noting. And what it meant was, it was mostly used as one word, but it's fine to use, a phrase or something. But to use a single word to, in your mind, to note or to label whatever it is you're experiencing. And the reason for that has a number of functions. One function is that it helps give the thinking mind something to do. Because if the thinking mind doesn't have anything to do, it gets in trouble. A thinking mind without anything to do is... will wander off in thought. So you're given it something very simple to do. It's a very simple, rudimentary thought. So if you're breathing in, that label would be in. As you're breathing out, it'd be out. And so the mind has something to do, and it can be a little more content. But what it has to do with helping you focus on what it is that's happening, what it is you're putting your attention towards. So if you're putting your attention towards your breathing, the mental note is about the breathing. If you have a pain in your knee, you might note pain or stabbing or something, and then that's encouraging you to stay there. It's like a very gentle words to stay there. Stay there. You might say it a few times very gently. Stay right there. The mind might want to wander off. You stay right there. And then sometimes, especially with emotions or certain kinds of thoughts, the note acknowledges the experience. And sometimes when things are acknowledged or named, they lose their power or they lose their pull or something can relax. Probably some of you have had the experience of, maybe there's tension in a room of people and someone finally names the tension and everyone's, kind of is acknowledged and people know. So sometimes it works in the mind as well, that the acknowledgement of something that's so clear by giving it a label or, naming it for what it is. Don't name it Fred. But if you feel fear, note it as fear, and so that can settle things. So any more questions about the instructions last week was mostly about mindfulness of the body. Was that useful for some of you to include that as part of your practice? Yes, please. So, yeah, I think you have them.
I try to pay attention to my body feel, but it's kind of hard to stay because I guess I don't see like immediate benefit of noticing how physically I'm feeling. Uh-huh. It's, for example, if I'm noticing I'm stressed out, right, and I can do something to make me feel better, mm-hmm. and so I feel more encouraged to pay attention to my feeling, but I'm not sure how I can benefit from. Can you help me see how I can benefit from knowing how my body physically is feeling?
There's a lot of benefits that come from bringing mindfulness to the body. One is that as we bring mindfulness to the body, we become more sensitive to the body and we become more aware of what's going on in the body. And the habit of a heightened awareness of the body sensation, what's happening in the body, is something that gives us a lot of useful information as we go about our life. Sometimes being tuned into your body gives you the first indication of what they feel, that something's a little bit off, that they're excited, that they're pulled back. There's all kinds of messages we can pick up if we're in our body. Also, the way that the human emotion and empathy and social intelligence works, we pick up a lot of cues, and it's the sum total of all the cues we pick up that we interpret or understand what's going on. And if we're only understanding what we see and what we analyze or understand through our concepts and ideas, we're picking up actually a very small subset of the overall cues that we can pick up. And so if you're not even looking, imagine, you probably had the experience, right, that things don't get communicated, what you had in mind when you send an email, because someone says back, you're really angry with me. You're just being short, being quick, right, in your email, and it was, they weren't there to pick up all the cues. And sometimes if you're on the phone, you also can't pick up all the cues because there's cues like in their facial expressions. So there's all these cues, and how we pick up, how we understand ourselves and how we understand the world around us is very much mediated through what goes on in our body. So you know that emotions are often felt in different places in the body. Certain emotions are in the stomach, some in the chest, some in the face, different places, right? And so the more we're tuned into that and aware of our body, the more we can pick up all the subtle and big cues of what's going on. And those cues help us understand the world around us and help us understand us for a holistic picture of what's going on. So one of the functions of mindfulness of the body is not to resolve anything at that time, not to kind of get something now, but rather to develop a skill, a habit, of being aware through your body, being embodied. So you're just building up that. And if you keep coming back to your body, feeling your body over and over again, it becomes second nature. so that you know, if you're having an intense conversation with someone, rather than losing yourself in the intensity of the conversation, you have the habit of staying grounded in your body and knowing what's going on in your body. So that gives you a lot more information of what's going on. Also, if you're familiar with staying in touch with your body, the body is like can be like the ballast of a boat. The ballast of the boat is like this in the keel. So all this heavy weight that keeps the boat from tipping over too much. So it keeps us centered and grounded if we're in the body. So we're in this heated conversation, we don't get lost and end up saying things we don't want. So that's one thing, some things. The other thing is that when there are tensions and pains in the body, bringing attention to those, it can sometimes it's like creating space. Attention and space are kind of like synonyms for some people. So if you're claustrophobic in your mind and you're caught up in all your thoughts and ideas and fears and everything, there's no space for things to unwind. But if you bring open awareness to your experience, then there's a way that open awareness gives space for it to unwind or to unfold or to relax. That can't happen if we're riding our experience really closely, duking it out, judging, fixing, trying to do all. And the same thing with physical experiences in the body. Even pain sometimes, certain kinds of pain, but tensions and stuff, that if you go into it from the inside and hold it with an open awareness, it allows for a certain kind of two things to happen. One is it allows it to unfold, to unwind in a nice way on its own, but it also does so with greater self-understanding along the way. So for example, if say you have tense shoulders, and they're so tense that you don't want to continue this way, so you go to a masseuse. And that's nice. You know, wow, it was pleasant, it was great, everyone should get a massage, you're ready to form the religion of massage, it feels so good. And you leave the masseuse really relaxed. So it's good, right? But what you've done is you had someone else from the outside relax your body, help you relax. And then when you leave, haven't understood yourself any better. And so what you do in your mind that gets you tense in the first place hasn't been understood. So within a few hours or an hour or 5 minutes of leaving the masseuse, you're all wound up again. If you go from the inside out, so the massage is the outside in. If you go from the inside out, and you go into the tension in your body with your awareness and are present for it, and then you can watch as it begins to relax, open up, and you can see, sometimes you can see what it is that's causing it, the emotions, the beliefs, the motivations that are operating that get you to be tense in the first place. So rather than bypassing the fear, the anxiety, the ambition, and all the things that might keep you tense, you get to face it through the body by really being present for it. So those are a couple of things. I don't know, is that enough?
Yeah, thank you.
Okay, so it is, in fact, today the topic is going to be mindfulness of emotions. And when I was introduced to this practice in Burma, I went to do a long retreat. It was a big deal to go to Burma because back then Burma was closed, pretty closed. You could get a one-week tourist visa, and then you can get a three-month meditation visa. And the only country I knew that had meditation visas. And they were hard to get. In fact, I was one of the first people to apply after the country had stopped doing meditation visas for a while. So it was on the first wave of Westerners going back in to a very famous monastery. And so they welcomed me to the monastery, and they gave me, this is like 1985, they gave me a cassette tape and a cassette player, and they said, listen to this. And it was about 30-minute instructions for this meditation that I'm teaching you, and then that was it. Go do it. Come back tomorrow and tell me how it went. And basically the instructions was, very simplistically, focus on your breathing. Notice your breathing. Until something else becomes more compelling than the breath, then notice that. And then go back to your breathing. And that's something that takes you away from the breath, something more compelling. It could be anything in the universe, in the universe of direct immediate experience, a sound, an emotion, a thought, whatever. And what I learned, it was quite a beautiful process of learning to bring attention to the full spectrum, the range of my human life, which I hadn't learned when I did Zen practice. In Zen practice, I learned a lot about staying present, being concentrated. I learned a lot about staying with the breath, getting concentrated. But I didn't learn anything about being present for my anger. They didn't say anything about how to practice with anger, right? Yeah?
Yeah.
Yeah, they were just angry. In Burma, I learned how to bring this careful attention to all aspects of my life. And what's quite beautiful about that, and what made me at some point really happy, was that there's something about bringing attention to something, calm, deliberate attention, where you can find your freedom in relationship to what's going on. It's kind of like if we're entangled, let's say fear. Most people get entangled in fear. And if you're caught up in the fear and riding it really close, thinking about it, reacting to it, trying to fix it, doing something, but trying to run up, and if you're like this, kind of all wrapped up in your fear, and you try to run away from it, that doesn't work very well, right? And if you try to attack it, you know, who gets hurt, you know? That doesn't really work, you know? Or, you try to solve it, you know, it just kind of like, it can be a mess. But with mindfulness, is kind of like just relax for a moment and look at it like this. Just look at it, just be with it. And in that looking at it, taking the moment to look at it, there's freedom, there's space. We're not entangled anymore. And it takes a while for people to understand how a simple, direct act of seeing, of recognizing what's there, of being mindful of what's there, is also a moment of freedom. Because often we have that moment of freedom, but then we're so quick to get back into the loop of our commentary and our reactions and all that, and we're back kind of caught up in it. But with time, with mindfulness, we learn there's freedom to be found by this simple, relaxed seeing what's there. And if you learn that you can do that with anything in your experience, no matter what it is, no matter how difficult it is, you can step back and see it, you realize you can be free in any situation at all. Free meaning that your mind is not going to get wrapped up and caught up and contracted, constricted, go wild, suffer because of the experience you're in. So even if you become unemployed, or you are unemployed, it might be very unfortunate circumstances. It might not be a good thing in many ways. But rather than being entangled with the unpleasantness of that, the difficulty of that, it's possible to step back and find freedom from the experience of being unemployed by looking at it and seeing it. And to do that and find a way to be balanced and centered in that is a tremendous refuge and provides a lot of safety and freedom, if I keep using the word, in this life of ours. So in Burma, I was told just to kind of just, you know, in 30 minutes, I got this cassette tape, do it, just do it. And what we've learned here in the West is in giving instructions to you, it's better to build it slowly. But that's where we're getting by 2 more weeks, everything. And so we did the breath the first week, as it is the center, the central focus. And then last week we did mindfulness of the body, how to bring this calm, deliberate attention to the experience of our body. And today we're going to do emotions, and how to bring this same kind of awareness to emotions. It's a lot easier to understand the instructions of emotions and to be balanced or free with our emotions if we understand that emotions are experienced through the body and we know how to bring mindfulness to the body. Then we're less likely to get entangled with the emotions. So that's why we follow emotions after the body. So, in a few minutes, I'd like to do a little meditation around this, but in preparation for that, so last week I talked about the commentary. Those of you here remember, and how we often get confused the commentary for the experience, and we all, or we get this, those two entangled. And if we can see the commentary, the interpretations, the judgments we have about the experience as distinct from the experience, then we can choose to put our attention in the experience rather than putting our attention in the commentary. Remember something like that? Okay. So today I'm going to build on that a little bit, that sometimes it's not a distant commentator that's just sitting there making comments. And sometimes we get involved with what's going on. And that's this extra involvement is very important to understand. So, the Buddha once was with a group of people, maybe like you, and he said, this is back in the old days, and he said, if a person was struck by an arrow, someone shot an arrow at a person, and the arrow pierced the person someplace, would that hurt the person? And the people said, oh yeah, be pierced by an arrow hurts. And then the Buddha said, if the shooter took a second arrow and shot that and pierced the person with the second arrow, would that hurt even more? Oh yeah, being hurt by two arrows it hurts more than one. And so then the Buddha basically said that sometimes what life experience does, just living, is life brings you the first arrow. You can't control all the arrows of life. But the second arrow is the one you shot. Don't shoot any second arrows. So if I'm walking down the sidewalk here, by the way, we do have a sidewalk that's a little bit bumpy there, so we have to walk carefully under the redwood tree. So if I'm walking down the sidewalk there, and I came to those bumps, and I trip and scrape my knee, that happens to people, right? So that's the first arrow. The second arrow would be, Gil, you are a lousy walker. You should not be allowed to walk. Or I hope no one saw that. I mean, I'm a mindfulness teacher. I teach people how to pay attention. And I should have been paying attention. You know, this is really embarrassing, you know, and no one's going to come back if I, you know, my whole reputation as a meditation teacher is at stake, and then I'm all worried, and I better go in there and explain myself, and you know, I had really good reason to be distracted, and so it isn't just sometimes just a second arrow we add a third arrow and fourth arrow. We just keep adding arrows. You know, Gil, you're a lousy, no good clutch. You don't even know how to walk. Why did I choose to walk next to a meditation center where people could see me? You know, I'm just, you know, I always make the wrong choices of what neighborhoods to be in. And certainly it's the wrong meditation center. And those people, they don't know what they're doing. They should know better. And I'm just adding arrows and arrows, right? All that hurts to do all that movements of the mind. You get it? So I know it hurts. So I'm not, to listen to it, so I'm not going to add any more arrows. But. And so what happens here is we're reacting and we're responding. And in Buddhism, we distinguish between two kinds of emotions. The emotions that arise because we're reacting to what's happening, and the emotions that occur because we're responding to what's happening. And reacting means, generally things like anger are reactive emotions. Something happens and we want to attack, we react to it. Compassion is a responsive emotion. It kind of more bubbles up from the inside with what, again, the source of it is really something inside in our hearts, in a sense, whereas the anger, the source is the pain we're experiencing and we're somehow pushing away or trying to deal with. So as you meditate, notice if you have interpretations, commentary, judgments about what's happening, about anything, but it's also about the present moment, meditation. But also notice if you have set loose arrows, second arrows, third arrows. So you sit here and meditate, and you're trying to follow whatever instruction I give, and your mind wanders off and starts thinking about what's happening in Washington. And after a few minutes, you hear my voice and say, oh, well, I'm here. Not in Washington, I'm here. And so you come back, and then you said, gee, you know, am I a klutz. I'm just a terrible meditator. I can't even listen, you know, I can't even be present for a little bit here, and I should probably take up knitting or something. And so those are second arrows, you know, what a lousy person I am. As opposed to, and this is where, instead of being entangled or sending arrows, the way we do here is, look at that. My mind wandered off. This is what wandering off is like. This is what it was like for me to get caught up in my thoughts. Now, what is it like to come back and experience my breathing? Let me just be with my breath. So this more calm, deliberate, just to see, and find that freedom of just seeing. Just seeing. Keep it really simple. You don't need to judge anything. You don't need to be critical of anything. Some people say that this kind of meditation we do here is one of the most permissive, forgiving experiences you can have in your life. Not because you can get away with anything, but because when you're sitting and meditating, you're allowed to be who you are, exactly how you are, provided you can see it like this, not like this. Does that make sense? Okay. So, what I'll do is I'll do a kind of guided meditation and introduce to you some of the things around emotions, and then I'll talk about it afterwards and give more instructions afterwards. So take a comfortable, alert meditation posture. If you're comfortable doing so, you can gently close your eyes. There is space up here on the carpet if some of you want to sit further up inside. Come all the way up. And then before going any further, take a moment to notice how you're feeling. What's your basic mood? Your basic emotional state? And as you notice your emotional state, your mood, how do you relate to that? What happens to you? Do you have commentary about it, judgments, concerns about it? Do you react to it, liking, not liking? And then run the experiment to see if you can just pull yourself back from it a little bit and just observe it. Just observe how you are, as if it's completely okay to be this way. As if you've never taken the time to know what it's like to be the way you are right now. It's the first time. So you're curious. What's it like in your body? For your body, your heart, your mind. Experiment for about a minute here of stepping back with your attention just to see. Try to be as simple as you can to recognize how you are. And allow yourself to feel or experience it. It's all okay. Part of the second arrows or the commentary would be, this is not okay. even if it's unpleasant. Let it be, just notice it. And then to begin the meditation the way it's usually begun, you can take a few long, slow, deep breaths. As you exhale, relaxing, softening your shoulders, perhaps you can relax your chest. Perhaps you can soften your belly. And then letting your breathing return to normal. And taking a few moments to scan your body to see if there's any obvious places of holding that you can relax. It might begin the forehead and the eyes. The jaw, the mouth. Perhaps you can soften your shoulders, shoulder blade area. And again, maybe you can soften your belly. And then within the body, as part of the body, become aware of how the body experiences breathing. Breathing in and breathing out. And part of the idea is to tune in to the experience of breathing as a way of disengaging from the thoughts of the day, thoughts, concerns. You take this wonderful capacity for attention and direct it to the experience of breathing rather than having it be pulled in and lost in the experience of thinking. Perhaps as you exhale, you can let go of your thinking, letting them float away like soap bubbles floating away. Let your thoughts go each time you exhale. You could, if you'd like, very gently, softly in the mind, say the word in as you breathe in, out as you breathe out, is a way of hanging in there with the breaths, series of breaths at a time. When you notice that you've drifted off in thought, try to be very simple with that. Don't see it as a problem, but just see it as an opportunity to begin again with your breathing. And then for the next little bit of time, you can let go of focusing on breathing. And take a moment here to notice now how you feel. What's your mood, your emotional state? Is anything you're reacting to? Any strong likes and dislikes operating? You might be calm, you might be restless, you might be content, you might be discontented. You might be anxious. You might be peaceful. You might be bored, you might be curious. You might be alert, you might be dull. You might be sad, you might be happy. Whatever way you are, experiment a little bit about just seeing it for what it is, calmly and quietly. You might be impatient. You might be patient. And see if you can step back away from however you're feeling so you're not caught in it, entangled, reacting to it, but instead clearly recognizing it. And if there's an obvious word that characterizes what it is, you might very quietly say the word as a part of that acknowledgement. This is what it is. And if there still remains some kind of mood or emotional state or mental state for you, see if there's any place in your body where that registers, that's expressed. Is it mostly in your head that you experience this? Is it mostly in your torso? In your chest? Is it in your arms or your legs, your belly? Every emotion has a physical expression. Can you identify your state of mind by some physical corollary expression? If you do, then bring your attention to that place in your body where the emotion is housed, the emotion is expressed. Feel it there. And what happens to your ability to be present if you feel it as an embodied experience? If you find that you want to move your body sitting here, hold off and don't move a little bit. And instead, see if you can tune in to the feeling, the emotion that might be prompting the movement. And instead of moving, simply look at that feeling. Look at it, at where it is in the body. And then, now to end the sitting for one more minute, come back to your breathing. Take a couple of deep breaths. And then breathe normally, and just for about 30 seconds, just hang out there with your breath. Be simple, breathing in and breathing out. And then to end this sitting, you can take a couple of deep breaths again. And when you're ready, you can open your eyes. So the topic is mindfulness of emotions, about how to bring this meditative awareness to your emotional life. And your emotional life is an important part of being a human being. And different people, different families, different societies have different relationships with their emotional lives. Different eras in American culture, the stereotype of it is a little bit is that different relationships to emotions. The stereotype, at least, of the 1950s were people who kept their emotions in. The stereotype of the 1970s was the encounter group where you let it all out and screamed and, you know, no inhibitions at all. Catharsis was really big in this 1970s. And what it's come to more now is that both of those, keeping them, repressing them, not very wise. Catharsis and too active expression is not often not very useful. But there is a middle way. And the middle way, a very powerful middle way, is what we do in meditation, which translates to a useful technique, a useful way of being with emotions in daily life. So in meditation, the idea is no emotion is unacceptable. This is the one place in your life where you're allowed to have any emotion whatsoever. You can have murderous rage that in your social life would be unacceptable, maybe. But in meditation, you can sit there and the privacy of your eyes closed, just being there, and you don't have to inhibit it, you don't feel bad about it. You can just let the murderous rage be there. You can have beatific, angelic feelings of infinite compassion and love for all beings, and in such a way that people at work would just be nauseated. But in meditation, you can sit and have just be there. So whatever comes up, you're allowed to be anything at all. And some people don't have that experience in their life. There's often judgments, ideas, what you should express, what you can't express, what's appropriate, what's not appropriate. What's safe to express, what's not safe to express. So in meditation is a place where it's safe to just let your inner life, your emotions, to be free and be as it is. So there's certainly not any inhibition. At the same time, what we're trying to do is to stay still with them. So we don't express them. They can express themselves through how they bubble up and course through our body, but we sit still. And we sit still with awareness. Meaning, this magic of awareness, we bring awareness to what these emotions are. We feel them. We get to know them better. We look at them carefully. So if you have that murderous rage, you would sit there quietly. It's safe because you're not going to move, right? So even though you might want to punch the guy out. I once wanted to punch the guy out next to me in the meditation hall. And he was poking me. This is a Zen monastery in Japan. And it's very formal, very strict. No one moves, because he was poking me. And I really wanted to punch him out. And I didn't do it because I was a wise meditator. I do it because it wasn't wise to do in the monastery. The consequences would not have been good for me. So it's possible. So, but meditation, so you sit there and you let it be. And it's safe because you're committed during that time not to move. The advantage of doing this, the reason to do this, and I hope you don't have murderous rage that often, but the reason to do this is so that you can learn to have a different relationship to your emotional life than most people do. Most people don't have a really good, balanced relationship to their emotions. Some people are trying to push them away because they're uncomfortable, certain emotions. Some people are trying to validate and get excited and get too much into them, and kind of like they live their life through the emotions and they want to express them all the time. They want to get them out there. There's all kinds of ways in which we relate. The advantage of meditation is in meditation, we're not trying to relate to them in any particular way, any philosophy or understanding. We're just trying to let them be and to be present for them. Don't push them away. Don't hold on to them. Don't act on them. Don't express them. Just let them be. And as we let them be, we're learning a different relationship. We're learning a relationship of not being pushed around by them, not being caught by them, not be involved with them, not being entangled with them, but rather learning this wonderful art of stepping back, creating that space between seeing the experience and the experience where freedom can happen. And this is very important with emotions, because if there isn't that space of freedom, it's all too easy to have the emotions run the show. And even people who are repressing their emotions, the emotions can come in through the back door, and suddenly their anger, which is kind of shoved down, can suddenly explode when they least expected it, because it's kind of just there with building up like a volcano pressure. There's a strong desire, and like you're walking down the street, and the next thing you know, you're walking down the street holding an ice cream cone. How did that happen? But because the desire just kind of took over. And probably maybe some of you might have had that in the kitchen with the refrigerator. How did that happen? Or you say something, and you say, I wish I didn't say that. And so this ability to be present, when you're sitting in meditation, to be still and quiet, physically, and not react, not get involved, not get pushed around, not pick up, not judge, not do second arrows, just to let it be there in a very, very simple way. Even if it's tumultuous in there, just let it be. And see if you can find that space of awareness that can just see it and watch it with a little bit of space. Some people find it useful to use the language of being the observer. So just sit back and observe the experience. Some people talk about it that way. And as we do this, we learn how to be freer in the emotions, not be pushed around by them or picking them up or acting on them. And that gives us the possibility of choosing what we do. And the ability to choose is part of what freedom is. So this ability to sit there and watch and let it be, but let it be with some freedom, gives you the choice, so that then you can decide whether to act on an emotion or not act on it, or express it or not express it. The other thing it does, it allows you to investigate it, to see it more clearly. What's really going on? So if for example, I'm, just an example of walking down the sidewalk here, and I trip, and then suddenly I get very anxious. I'm an awareness, mindfulness teacher, and all my students have seen that I wasn't paying attention and I tripped, and this is really, I'm really anxious now. So what I could do is just run away, and not to think about it anymore, and that's problem solved, right? Another possibility is I could turn towards my anxiety, be present for it and feel it, be mindful of it, recognize I'm being anxious, And in that calm recognition, this is anxiety, I'm anxious right now, I might see that that there's other things operating as well. What might be operating is, in general, I might be walking around with the idea that it's important to be a well-respected meditation teacher. And my identity as a well-respected meditation teacher is seriously at stake when I trip outside in the sidewalk. And the anxiety is about my reputation. Not that you're going to laugh at me at that moment. And if I look at that more carefully, I see I'm always carrying that with me, this idea of I'm this kind of guy, right? Not really, but I hope not. And so in doing that, but by staying with it and learning how to stay non-reactively, just stay calm and present and just watch, this is anxiety, let me just be with it, then soon enough I start seeing, oh, there's more going on here than meets the eye. And generally with emotions, there's more than meets the eye. If we stay present and it opens up, it reveals to us what's going on. The other thing that happens with emotions, when you do this mindfulness of emotions things, is that we're giving breathing space to the emotions. There's maybe some of you know the statistic or the figure, but there are nowadays, in the last, I don't know, years, psychologists, I guess, who have study emotions, and they made this amazing claim. They claim that emotion is triggered, is evoked, and if the emotion is left alone, it will not last more than a minute or two. And that goes in the face of most of your emotions, I'm sure, and the strong ones, where they last for a while. 5 minutes, 6 minutes, a day. they stay, certain kind of moods can stay for a long time. And so it seems like, wait a minute, these scientists don't know what they're talking about. They haven't investigated me. But what they mean is that in order for an emotion to persist through time, it's getting renewed over and over again. And it gets renewed, for example, by telling ourselves a story. So, I apologize because of my lack of creativity. So I tripped out there, right? And now I feel anxious about, let's make it different. Now I feel like, that I'm just a klutz. I'm a hopeless walker. And no one's ever going to like me because I can't never really walk very well. I'm always, tripping, and I'm just a bad person, hopeless person. So I feel discouraged. Maybe that's or depressed even. And so there I am, feeling depressed. And then my mind says to me, it's true, you're a lousy walker. And that just stirs it up again. And then another few seconds goes by, or 10 seconds go by, and I think, yeah, I've been walking in a bad way all my life. I'm not sure how it's bad, but I'm sure it was bad. Maybe I point my toe out a little bit too far to the right, and in fact, I think I do, and maybe I should go to get my shoes adjusted, but that's too hard, and I've gotten expensive shoes, and I tripped anyway. I can never walk properly, and we stare at it again. And we keep telling ourselves stories, and these stories keep reinforcing or renewing the discouragement or the depression. Not all depressions work this way, but there are many emotions where this is where they get renewed over and over again. And in that spirit, in that idea that the scientists are saying, emotions, by left alone, only last a minute or two. So what we do in meditation is we're learning to leave our emotions alone. Not adding second arrows, not adding more stories, not adding interpretations and judgments, just letting it be. And it's a very radical thing to learn the art. It's not necessarily easy to learn the art of sitting still and let an emotion bubble up and just let it be, as if it has permission to be there, as if it's completely okay for it to be there. You don't have to be embarrassed. You don't have to be defensive. You don't have to be right or wrong. It's just an emotion. It's just an emotion. And let it be. And then note, and then see what reveals itself. notice what goes on. What else will you learn if you have this little bit of space where you're just watching? What is this? Make some sense? Now, because story making is often how we renew these emotions, one of the things we do in order to stay present and feel in emotions that helps us not get into the story is to feel the emotions in the body. And as I said in the meditation, all emotions are found in the body, almost always. So, you know, if you feel fear, anxiety, it might be, you know, some kind of tightness and constriction in the belly. Or if you get angry, you might feel heat in your face, or tightness or constriction in your chest. Or you might feel something in your shoulders. Or your hands are doing interesting things. Or you're doing things with your feet. You're tapping your feet. The energy is going somewhere. Where's the energy of the emotion? If you're feeling love, you might feel warm and soft in parts of your body. If you're feeling compassion, you might feel it a little different way. If you feel happy, you'll feel physically different than you feel if you feel joyful. Have you ever thought about, ever felt the difference between joy in your body and happiness? You might, you know, look for opportunities and see how does a body experience those two things differently. So these emotions are found in the body. So if you can, in fact, one of the great, the founder of Western American psychology was a guy named William James. And he said that if you didn't know how, if your body wasn't helping you, giving you signals, you wouldn't know what emotions you were having. The body is, it's right. And so if you can drop down into your body and feel the expression or feel the energy of the emotion, the mood, the mental state in your body, that becomes a support and to not trip off into the stories. Because the body is not a story. So come back into the body, come back into the body. So if you feel angry and you keep going into like she did, he did, whatever story, come back into your body and feel where the tightness and the heat is in your body. And let that be there and just hold it there. And the image of holding it there that I have, holding attention there, that I use sometimes is that of gently cupping my hands together, open like this and touching the hands like this, like I'm holding something really soft and tender in my hands. Like I come with my awareness and I just hold that place in my body where I feel those emotions just to be there with it. It's okay, whatever it might be. And then if I can stay in the body, I'm less likely going to trip off into the story. And then if I do, then I come back. I keep coming back. So to kind of say all this in a little different way, some people like kind of, you know, steps, what to do. So when you have, so we sit and meditate by focusing on the breath. Breath is very helpful, a very useful focal point for relaxing, getting concentrated, developing your mindfulness. But then when something becomes more compelling than the breath, it makes it difficult to stay with the breath, then you can let go of the breath and turn your attention to that compelling experience. If there's an emotion, and the emotion is just kind of in the background, just leave it there. You don't have to bother with it. But if the emotion comes into the foreground, so that it's a little bit hard, it's getting hard to stay with the breath, then you can let go of the breath, and then what you're going to do is mindfulness of the emotion. And so the first thing to do is to recognize that it's there. The recognition of an emotion is sometimes a very significant act. There are times where I kind of didn't quite know what was going on for me, but when I could finally, oh, that's depression. Something inside of me released or relaxed. Didn't necessarily go away, the depression, but, oh, there's something very powerful sometimes with recognition. So even to know that emotion is the compelling thing going on, some people have learned that when they recognize that there's strong emotions going on, that it's better not to make any decisions, you know, because they keep making the wrong decisions when they're like they say the wrong things. So it's good to recognize that now we have strong emotions going on. The second thing, especially in meditation, after you've recognized it, is to see if you can allow it to be there. Give it permission to be there. And giving it permission to be there doesn't mean you go around beating the pillows. because you're sitting still, but let it just course through your body. Let it just be there as it is. And that's an art. It's a skill to learn how to get out of the way of your, so you're not reacting, judging, interpreting, doing all this stuff to it. So don't despair if you find yourself reacting, judging, upset about your emotions, involved in your emotions. You probably have a lifetime habit of doing that. People generally do. So that's fine. Just what you want to do is start noticing what these habits are, how you are, and slowly, as you start noticing better and better what's going on, a day will come where you'll learn how to have a strong emotion and just let it be there without any involvement whatsoever. One of the magic moments for me in my meditation career was a time when I was doing walking meditation, and we meditated with the eyes open. And there were other people doing walking meditation nearby, and someone walked into my lane. And first I thought, well, the person's certainly going to kind of, you know, go around me when I come. But no, the person stayed and held his ground. Like it claimed my lane. Uh-oh. Yeah, serious territory here. And so there was this flash of anger that arose. But I'd learned this art of not getting involved, just watching it, and it felt like my mind was Teflon. It just, the anger arose and went away. Probably the anger lasted about 2 seconds. It was strong. There it went. And so that's quite wonderful. I've had strong emotions where, difficult emotions that didn't go away that easily, but because I learned to recognize them and be present and allow for them, being allowing them is also like being patient with them, I could take them into account and then say what I had to do and speak to people in a way that was wiser than if I was kind of being pushed around by the emotion. So the first thing is to recognize it. The second is the art of trying to allow for it to be there. The third is this thing about naming, the mental noting. There's something about naming something, an emotion, that it's like naming the dragon in the fairy tales. If you name the dragon, it loses its power. If you name the emotion, it loses some of its power. And the power it generally loses is the power of us being entangled with it. Because to name it, you kind of step back to kind of, oh, I see you. That's what you are. And the fourth thing we do is to investigate. And it's in the long term, this is probably the most useful part of mindfulness practice. And that is to learn to look more carefully. What is this experience? Not to analyze it, not to think your way into understanding it more, but more like, what is this? And then look more carefully, feel more carefully. So get curious. What is the experience of happiness? How is that? What is the experience of joy? How are those different? What's the experience of restlessness? I had a great meditation once. I was really restless. Boy, was I restless. And I sat there with my eyes closed and just and said, okay, this is interesting. Let me investigate this. And let me just kind of, and it was like ping pong balls bouncing off the wall inside of me. It's like this energy. It's like, and I got so interested. It was like so fascinating. As opposed to the other option around my restlessness, which was to believe it and get caught in it and tense around it. It was much more fun to kind of like be curious and watch it, you know, seeing where we'd go and what we'd do and feeling how my legs wanted to bolt. And it was great just to watch it. It's not great to be identified with it and feel like I have to do something because of it. So this investigation. So we look, where is it in the body? That's part of the investigation. What happens if we hold it with the cupped hands and just hold it for a while? Maybe for, you know, maybe you are, have some strong emotion. And what happens if I just hold it gently in my awareness, breathe with it for 5 minutes? What happens? Feeling it where it is in my body. It's remarkable, I think, how quickly these emotions shift and change. If we're not feeding them, we're not adding stories to them, but we're bringing the a breathing room to them, we're bringing space to them, the space of awareness, hold them there in space. all this is done in it with a kind of what I like to call a meditative approach. We're trying to approach all of this in a calm and deliberate way, to use our awareness, our attention, to calmly and deliberately now, let me just look at this emotion. Let me look at these body sensations. Let me just be with this breathing. And then if you can't do that because you're anxious, not so calm, restless, then calmly look at that. What's that like? So now I've spoken for a while, so now it's your turn. Do you have any questions about that or concerns about that? Or
Thank you. This is all very new to me, and I'm just wondering with emotions, if you can talk about the connection with feelings and emotions. So if you have feelings...
What's the difference for you? Can you describe the difference for me? And then I'll talk about the connection.
That was my question.
You want...
Well, feelings is not something you can kind of shed, or it's something you feel strongly about. And then emotion, I would imagine, is an articulation of the feelings.
So some people use feelings to mean preferences. So then there's a cognitive part of it. There's a belief connected to it, ideas connected to it. The word feel, all these emotions are somewhat vague, what they actually mean. They're categories that contain all these other things within them. There's no emotion. There's anger and sadness and all these things, right? Some ways we use the word feelings and emotions sometimes synonymously, sometimes we use them a little differently. Sometimes a feeling is used almost as a synonym for intuition. I have an intuition of something, I have a feeling. sometimes it's used as an opinion, but we try to give it a little more authority by saying, I feel. This is not a good thing. That's, without having to explain why we have the opinion. Where the overlap, where the differences are, I don't know. But we just bring our attention to it. And next week we're going to talk about thinking, the cognitive side. So as you kind of be present for this, you might notice to what proportion of the experience you're having is connected to ideas, preferences, concepts, motivations, and what part is more what we more commonly call emotions. Does that make some sense?
Yeah, thank you.
I'm not that satisfied with the answer, but... we don't really have a clear definition of what emotions and feelings are. I just hope to get you in the territory so you can just notice things like anger and sadness and restlessness and boredom and impatience and contentment and those are the things. That's what we're looking at, is those things, whatever we want to call those.
Hello?
Yes.
Nervous.
Oh, good, perfect. See, he's practicing it.
I'm curious, if we don't have any cycling or stories... And like I notice in this class, we laugh a lot. It's something that's spontaneous, joyful.
Yes.
Is there any reason to be... Do you apply the mindfulness to everything?
Yes.
Oh, okay.
I mean, you can. You don't have to. Some people just do the mindfulness when they want to, when they think it's useful. Some people only do it when they're kind of depressed. Some people never do it when they're depressed, only do it when they're happy. Or when they get around to it, But it's the greatest power of this is, yes, it can be done all the time.
So we gain more insight or see clearer when we apply it to both, I guess, positive and negative?
Yes. We get more insight, we have greater freedom and insight and understanding of our life if we're able to be present for the positive and the negative experiences we have. It's quite a wonderful thing. And as Buddhist spiritual life develops, meditation life in particular develops, there comes a tipping point where at some point the experiences become more and more joyful, like blissful, a lot of happiness can well up. And so then we want to learn how to work with that and be present for that. And what's interesting about the happiness that arises in meditation is that it's not a happiness dependent on something external happening to you. You don't have to win the lottery. And it's quite something to experience happiness from the inside out, you know, for no particular good reason. Isn't that nice to have, be happy without a reason? So over here.
Okay, so my question's probably really basic, but I'm having a really hard time understanding how labeling and interpreting an emotion is not the same thing as telling a story. So I'll give you an example. Like, let's say I'm sitting at work and I realize something is off. And so I'm like, I'm going to meditate on this. And so I stop typing and I close my eyes and I start meditating on it and I go, I'm unhappy. And then as I'm meditating on being unhappy, I go, well, no, really, I'm just bored. And then as I think about being bored, I go, it's not really that I'm bored, it's that I'm doing mindless data entry and I feel like I'm undervalued, you know, and I'm just undervalued. And I got this great education and yet I'm getting paid nothing to do data entry, right?
So let's do the whole thing over again.
Yeah.
It was great. It was great. It was really great. Now, can you do the whole thing, if you can remember what you said,
right.
Can you do the whole thing over again without using the word I?
Yeah, so unhappy, bored, undervalued.
So now, what's the difference between saying it as a sentence, I'm bored, I'm unhappy, I'm off, it just, oh, there's a feeling of offness here. Right now there's unhappiness. What shifts for you?
I don't know. Like, it. Like to me, if I just stopped on unhappy, say, then that would almost be a lie. Like, that's why I'm worried about. Like, if I just stopped at unhappy,
yeah.
If I just said unhappy, and then I fixated on that, then that would be a false story because the truth is, I feel, you know, undervalued.
Uh-huh. Do you need a story?
I think it's more insightful to have a story.
More interesting. Maybe it's more interesting. But it might not be more freeing. So there is a time in our life where stories, understanding the context and the history of what goes on and our values and our sense of purpose in life is a very important thing to do and to reflect on, absolutely. And maybe that when you're sitting at work, that's the time to do that. But in meditation, during mindfulness meditation, that's not the time to do that. That would be the time to, because to say I am unhappy, that is actually a story. The whole I thing is a very complicated thing. It's not an innocent thing to say I, to assume the self, self-identity, individuality. It comes with so much baggage. And it's all these associations with what I is and what a good I is and a bad I is and what I is supposed to have and supposed to need and supposed to get. And the kind of I am supposed to have compared to for my parents, and the kind of I am supposed to have my boss. It's just like once you get into it, you'll never get out. You'll be stuck in the I world, it's like flypaper. But to sit there and recognize that right now, it's a skill to learn. Right now, I'm feeling there's boredom, just boredom. Let's not tie it to I and the story of I and my life. It's just boredom. It might not give you insight about why you're bored, which might be more useful at work, but to learn the skill in meditation, just to recognize it, keep it really, really simple, and learn how simple you can be present can teach you how not to get entangled in the stories that come up. And so when the stories come up, and you're engaged in the stories, you're not pulled into them or caught by them or pushed around by them, and there can be much more peace. The common experience for meditators who learn to make the switch from looking at their experience through the lens of I, through the lens of it's just an experience, they feel much more peaceful. Suddenly, like this burden gets dropped. I is like a burden. And so you say you're sad, I'm so sad, versus sadness. Sadness is happening. it's very easy with, it's, I mean, it's, it can be innocent and fine to say, I am sad, but it's so easy for it to fall into, oh, I am so sad. And then there's, I'm feeling sorry for myself. To just recognize sadness, there's sadness happening here. A lot of people who meditate find that they there's a kind of maturing, growing up movement that happens that gets them out of the kind of over-identification with I. So, oh, just sadness, just boredom. And then something else will open up. And it was very nice the way you reported it, that you saw different things about yourself in that process. If you did the process, and I'm not saying it's wrong, right? It was a good process. But if you'd done the other process of mindfulness, just this is boredom, and stayed with that, in that way, it might have opened up to other aspects of your life that normally you wouldn't see, and maybe deeper places.
It's very interesting because we seem to live in a culture that values this identifying with, you know, I messages and ownership, personal ownership.
Yeah, if so I trip on the sidewalk, you will.
So it's like the whole other side of that, you know, it's just interesting, the juxtaposition of those, of just distancing from it. When our whole culture is like, well, own how you feel.
How do you feel?
The psychology,
yes.
The sort of Western psychology of sort of personal ownership.
Right.
And talking about yourself with I messages and ownership. And
yeah.
It's just another.
And it certainly has its place. It's not inappropriate to do that at times, but it can be overdone. And it can be overemphasized, you know, so how we're feeling. And overemphasize, you know, the personal responsibility thing. What I find is that there's something about sitting upright in meditation with your eyes closed and not moving and learning not to be pushed around, not being for or against these things, and not adding stories. Even the story of this is my sadness is more than you need to do when you're meditating. Is very maturing for people. There's a kind of a growth in autonomy and dependence, self-understanding, strength, capacity to act, capacity to self-monitor that arises from this thing. It kind of brings people into balance. That's what I find. Yes, here. Yeah. Yes, please.
Yes. How do you apply this mindfulness to situations that, you know, say a situation makes you angry and
yes.
you want to start yelling at somebody, and how do you use this mindfulness? Do you stop and say, I'm being mindful, I'm anger right now, or...
You might. Yes, it depends on the situation, right? Some situations maybe are so intense and so dangerous that maybe you don't have time to stop. But it could be as simple as saying, you know, asking your friend you're with, saying, you know, I need to think about that for a moment. Can we be quiet? And you're not thinking at all. What you're going to do is you're going to tune into yourself. What's going on here for you? And so that would be tuning into what's happening here would be mindfulness, beginning of mindfulness. And you might notice you're tense. You hadn't noticed how tense you were. And so you find, at least I don't have to be tense. I can be angry. But let me not be a tense, angry person. Let me just relax. And let me look more carefully at this anger and just hold it. Take a few minutes with it, maybe, if you can, and be with it. And this is what I do. If I get really angry, I prefer not to engage a person that I'm angry with while I'm angry. I don't find it so useful. And so what I like to do, if I'm really angry, I go for a walk. And I stay and I allow the anger to be there. I just let it be there. When I go for a walk, I let myself have my thoughts. But I just stay present, feeling it, being with it, until what gets shown to me is that underneath the anger, there's either fear or hurt. And once I recognize the fear and the hurt, then the anger becomes less important because it's more primary, the fear and the hurt. And then I'll go back and talk to the person. Because I find it's much more productive to talk to a person if I say, when you said that, that frightened me. If I say, when you said that, I got angry. Boy, did I get angry. You know, they get defensive. It doesn't give them space to kind of... But if I say, that really frightened me, most people don't get defensive, and most people don't stay offensive. most people begin to kind of soften and you kind of have a more reasonable conversation. So that was a whole process, you know, if I have to. If I don't have to respond, I would go and just be with myself and be present and feel it and just be until either dissipated because I relaxed or I understood what was going on in a better way.
What happens if you can't reflect on it and you're in the situation where you have to talk and uh-huh. communicate?
How I'd like to answer that question is that mindfulness, the ability to be mindful and attentive, heightened attentiveness to what's going on, so you really can track yourself, monitor yourself well. You can know what you're thinking, know what you're feeling, know what you're about to say. You can track the other person, know what's going on there, read the other person. You can stay centered in the experience. If you try to do that, if the only time you try to do that is in the middle of a crisis, you probably don't have much to call upon. But if you start practicing meditation and practicing mindfulness in daily life, slowly over time, over days and weeks and months, it'll start becoming a strength and a habit. So when you come to the time of crisis, it'll be second nature to stay present and not get lost in the yelling and the screaming and whatever. Does that make sense?
Mm-hmm.
So it does. As we do this mindfulness, it's like a muscle that gets stronger and stronger. And after a while, it becomes second nature, so much so it's not so intentional anymore. It becomes just kind of like what you do, your heightened sense of awareness of how you feel, what you're thinking, what's happening around you. Just, you know, you're present. Does it make sense?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Okay. Yes, one more, and then we should stop, I think. Is that okay? Or this? Let's. I see over here, she's been trying here, and then we'll do two more, I guess. But she's been trying.
Oh.
And then we'll do you. Go ahead.
So I have a question about your second arrows. I can relate very well to the tripping story because a couple of weeks ago I
Hold it vertical. Horizontally, yeah.
Can you hear me now?
Yeah.
Okay. I said I can relate to you very well about the second arrows. I trip constantly. I walked through a glass door a couple of weeks ago and broke my nose. But isn't that a learning opportunity in terms of, you know, I should slow down, I should watch where I'm going, kind of thing. Should I not do those second arrows just to learn?
No, I don't think you could. If you're it's possible, it's useful. I mean, if you keep running into doors over and over again, then, you know, maybe you should do it as an exercise and just, you know, just kind of get really kind of explore what's going on and kind of run into it on purpose and see what it's like and what leads up to it, and maybe that would be useful. But generally, we don't, I don't recommend intentionally creating second arrows to hurt yourself. But when it does happen, and you have a second arrow, then the mindfulness practice is to not add a third arrow, but rather to turn and look at it, be present for it. And in that being present for it, you might learn what was going on. So, you know, so if you walked into a glass door, that's the first arrow. I don't know what your second arrow was, but say that you just feel like you're like, you just really hate glass doors. And you're just like fuming at, whoever invented glass doors, that person should be put in jail. This glass door thing is terrible. You know, and then I should need to write to the authorities about glass doors, and then we should just ban them. I think I should join the Libertarian Party so we can get rid of glass doors or whatever. You know, those are arrows. All those, if you really get into those with anger and ferocity, those are kind of arrows. So if you stop and recognize, wait a minute, I am blaming myself, I'm blaming other people. Let me learn about this. What's going on here for me? And to be able, the ability to learn what's going on is supported a lot by the ability to stop and hold it gently and calmly without being reactive to it, without being pushed around by it. So this skill in meditation to have an emotion arise and not react to it, not be for it, not be against it, not make conclusions for it, translates into our daily life If we do the same thing there, we have a better ability to investigate, to understand what's going on, than if we're caught by it and entangled. So yeah, learn from what happens to the door. Learn from walking into doors so you don't do it again. So one more, and then we should stop. Please.
You kind of answered my question, but I was going to say that
her piece is that to acknowledge anger, to just, and I confront anger. I'm a little preschool, so I confront anger a lot from small people, and they're always angry about something. And I just, sometimes it makes me laugh because it's not my anger, it's their anger. And for her, you might be able to say to this, or just not say anything, but just to kind of take a step back and think, he's really angry, or they're really angry. And don't, like you just said, don't get involved. It's not your anger to take on. Mindfulness of emotion would say, don't bring yourself into that emotion.
So the last time I got really angry with someone was... I asked, we need to go and talk, I said. So we went to a room, just the two of us, and I was really angry. And so I said to the person, right now I'm really angry. And I could, you know, my breathing was fast or whatever. And I said, I need you to know that I'm angry, and I think I would like to sit here quietly for a minute or two so I can catch my breath, so I can just be with it. So there's where an example where mindfulness helped me. I was aware enough of being angry, and I could tell the person. And so rather than saying, I didn't attack her, I admitted, I am angry. That's where a skillful use of the word I. I'm angry here. Over here, I'm angry. I'm an angry person right now. So I didn't want to get involved in the blame thing right away, because that wasn't so useful. So then we sat together, I calmed down, she understood my feelings, what was going on for me, how serious it was. And then when we started having a conversation, it could be much more productive than if I had just kind of attacked her right away. And I've also done the thing sometimes of showing up with friends, and I've been self-aware enough to say to them, you know, you should know that I'm kind of grumpy. So I think you should know this. And that's mindfulness out loud, so other people know, and they can take that into account. That's useful. So emotions. So if you have some emotions this week, then experiment with them. Be curious about them. Investigate. See what it is. See if you look for an opportunity this week where you have some really good emotion. Clear emotion, strong emotion, and then see if you can be off on yourself by yourself a little bit, and imagine, pretend that you're clueless about emotions, like you've never had this emotion ever before, and for the first time ever, you're going to be a naturalist, and you're just going to study it as if you were an impartial naturalist. And naturalists don't interfere with nature when they study; they just look. What it's like. When I'm this way, it's like this here, it's like this, this is how it's my body, this is the feeling, these kind of thoughts I have. Just kind of, and see what happens if you become a naturalist of your emotion. And the world might be a better place than if you kind of identify really strongly with it and entangled with it. You step back and just hold it. So next week, we'll do mindfulness of thinking, and for many people, thinking is one of the bigger challenges in meditation. The mind keeps wandering off in thought, and so it's important to talk about. But thinking, mindfulness of thinking, is really fascinating. There's layers and layers of interesting depth to discover in bringing attention to thinking. Thinking isn't what you think. And so there is a handout today, and we do have Jim Podolsky is here with the yellow shirt sitting on the steps, and Diana Clark and Richard Sievers at the soundboard. All of them have a lot of experience and wise in the ways of meditation and mindfulness. So if you want to ask them questions at the end, you're welcome to talk to them or come up and talk to me. Thank you.